This is Matt Wells at UN News. The private sector should not take the lead in poverty alleviation, but it should remain a key obligation of governments to improve the life of the poorest people across the world, according to Philip Alston, the UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights. The privatisation of public services such as healthcare, social protection, education and prisons has been promoted by international organisations such as the World Bank and even the UN, Mr. Alston told UN News in an in-depth interview. The special rapporteur believes countries like the United States are increasingly allowing profit-driven private companies to run services for the estimated 40 million people who live in poverty in the US. Daniel Dickinson sat down with Philip Alston to discuss his role as an independent observer of poverty and began by asking him what he'd seen in the seven countries he's visited since 2014 when he became special rapporteur.
I think countries have varied enormously in terms of their approach to trying to eliminate extreme poverty. I have been to a number of countries that are really very seriously committed to trying to achieve that objective. Been to others that seem to have downgraded it and do very little in this regard. So I think every country is different rather than there being a single overall picture.
And when you go into the field, do you spend a lot of time talking to people who are suffering from extreme poverty?
I do. The most important part of any mission is the advance preparation. So I spend months talking to people within the country and outside, setting up meetings and interviews and so on. But I certainly make a very big point of meeting with people on the ground in the countries that I visit, actually visiting people who are living in poverty, talking to them about their perceptions of the problems that they are confronting.
Has anything shocked you about what you've seen?
Obviously, the conditions are terrible in the great majority of cases. People live in ways that are unimaginable to the rest of us.
Can you give some examples?
I think in most of the countries that I've visited, once you really get to the bottom, people are living without access to water. They're living without access to sanitation. They are not sure where their next meal is coming from. They have children running about all over the place who they can barely clothe. And the situation is grim. The challenge is never-ending. One of the more problematic parts of the job is that so many wealthy people, so many people like me, think, well, these people should just get their act together and should just pull themselves out of poverty. But when you see the situation that they're in, it would be extremely hard to envisage how any of us would pull ourselves out of that.
One of your more recent missions was to here in the US, where you visited multiple locations. Is it more difficult to understand poverty in a developed country like the US when you have so much wealth existing alongside extreme human hardship?
Well, I think in a poor country, there's the easy excuse to fall back on, which is that, well, we just don't have enough money. I don't think that's convincing, because I think every country has the money if they really wanted to. I think it is a political choice everywhere, but they convince themselves that's what it's all about. In a rich country, that narrative doesn't apply because the money's there. So they need a different rationale. And the rationale there is that these people are lazy. They have themselves to blame for their predicament, that it's going to be better for them, better for their dignity if they have to work their own way out of the situation. And that's very difficult to cope with, that form of self-justification for doing nothing for one's fellow human beings who are clearly in a very bad position.
And presumably you don't agree with that argument which is given by the authorities in those countries.
There's a small, and I emphasize small, percentage of cases where indeed people are refusing to work when they could. People are presenting themselves as having a disability when it's not the case or it's not serious. But in the vast majority of cases, the overwhelming number of cases, it's just not true. These people are genuinely unable to find work or unable to work, or they have so many obligations in terms of caring for relatives and just keeping the family alive that they're not able to simply get out and work, even if the jobs were there, which in most cases they're not.
What, in your opinion, makes poverty such a key human rights issue?
Poverty, for me at least, is actually the most important of all human rights issues, and that's not just because that's the focus that I have professionally. If you're poor, you're going to be tortured first. You're going to be arbitrarily arrested by the police. You're going to be detained endlessly. You're going to be beaten up. So it's the poor who really suffer the brunt of civil and political rights violations. Middle-class people are much less vulnerable, much less touchable by the forces of violence. That really puts it at the heart of even the traditional human rights framework. But of course, then when you bring in the concept of economic, social and cultural rights, the violations are even more obvious and dramatic, because people living in extreme poverty don't have adequate food, don't have access to decent health care, and often their children don't have access to education.
You talked about poverty worsening in some of the countries you've visited. Since you became Special Rapporteur in 2014, I understand you've been to Chile, Romania, Mauritania, China, Saudi Arabia, the United States and Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give me an example from one of those countries where poverty seems to be getting worse?
Well, I think the easy case is the United States, where the present administration is taking a range of steps which can only lead to far greater problems in terms of poverty. There are official US government statistics that show that some 40 to 45 million people currently live in poverty. There are many scientific studies that show that the various welfare programs that exist have kept that number down to that level. In other words, it would be 20, 30 million higher were it not for key government programs. But this administration is essentially trying to dismantle a lot of those programs. And at the same time, it has adopted massive tax cuts, which absolutely ensure that the discourse is now going to turn to the need to reduce welfare, to reduce social protection, because that's the only way to avoid an even larger deficit. So I think what you've got there is an almost determined effort to increase poverty while denying that it really exists.
How disturbing do you find that?
I find it tragic. I find the change from the United States of old, where Franklin Delano Roosevelt was really deeply committed to eliminating poverty, where Lyndon Baines Johnson made it his one of his really most important initiatives. And even in the days of Nixon, poverty was high on the administration's agenda. But today it's fallen off. It's of very little concern to either, I would say, of the major political parties. And there is a total lack of compassion, essentially, towards those who are less fortunate. The winners are taking all.
The privatization of public services, especially in the US, is part of this complicated jigsaw puzzle, isn't it? Indeed, you've just written about this.
Yes, I think what we've seen is the triumph, as it were, of basic tenets of neoliberal economic policy, which essentially insist that the size of the state should be shrunk as much as possible, that the role of government should not be significant in any area, that taxation should be reduced to an absolute minimum. And going along with all of this is that the private sector should be responsible for as much as possible in both the economic and social spheres. And I think what that means is that you're replacing any notions of public goods, public service, the obligation that a government has to try to care for its people, with entities that are simply driven by the profit motive. I've no problem with the profit motive, that's fine, but it is not going to produce optimal results in areas like education, healthcare, prisons, and a whole range of other areas where the goals that society needs to achieve are just very different from those that a profit-oriented corporation is going to identify.
Is it possible, in fact, to reduce poverty in the scenario you've just described, where public services are privatised?
No, I think that a key part of trying to help people to escape from poverty is being able to provide them with decent schools, decent health services, provision for young children. None of those are going to be done effectively by the private sector. And as we shrink government budgets, as we take taxation revenue away, those functions are simply going to fall by the wayside. I don't think it's even reasonable, actually, to expect the private sector to be taking the lead in poverty alleviation. I think that's a quintessentially public undertaking. But if the government is starved of all resources and its powers radically reduced, it's not going to be in a position to take up that responsibility.
When you go on one of these missions, you always write a report. How have countries reacted to what are often very critical and damning reports of the way they deal with poverty?
I mean, I think my reports vary in tone and degree of criticism and so on. There are countries, I think I said very positive things about China's record in terms of eliminating poverty, a real, genuine political commitment. I was critical of their broader human rights policies, which I think are deeply problematic. But when it comes to poverty alleviation, they really are serious and they've done an excellent job. I think no country likes to be criticized, that's clear. But I also think that the reports have often had a major impact. In Mauritania, I think I documented pretty clearly the extent to which the key problems are the competition between the different ethnic groups and the insistence by the dominant ruling group, which makes up well under one third of the population, their efforts to exclude and downplay the well-being of all the others. That was something that the government itself never says, never permits any differentiation according to ethnic groups, but putting it on the table was, according to most reports, a very helpful contribution.
And in the US?
In the US, I think, of course, the government rejected it. More worryingly, they came up with their own statistics. They trashed the official US Census Bureau statistics. They instead followed an analysis, highly dubious, by the Heritage Foundation, which said, you know what? The war on poverty, it's been won. There's almost no poor people in the United States. That's tragic because that's denial. And like alcoholism or any other problem, acknowledgement that there is a problem is the very first stage. And so an insistence on the part of government authorities that, well, there's absolutely no problem is really very problematic.
Personally, how difficult a job is this for you? I mean, you're really working on the front line of deprivation. Does it keep you up at night?
I mean, I feel very strongly about this. I feel very privileged to have the opportunity to do it. I do it from a position of great comfort and security. I'm not suffering. I'm not putting anything on the line. But I do feel ashamed, I suppose, of the priorities that most societies have adopted, where there really is no compassion, there's no solidarity, there's a denial, which is very frequent, that, you know, there aren't many poor people in our country, and to the extent that there are, it's their fault. Well, I say, get out and look at what's really going on. Get out and talk to people, and you'll see that there's a lot of horror out there, and you could actually do something about it. But people don't. And so I think it's very important for people like me who are in a position to make some sort of difference to really highlight that neglect.
And what difference can you make? Is it just highlighting the neglect and then moving on to the next country that you're going to visit?
I mean, I think a lot of the, or at least some of the reports that I do have a much longer shelf life than simply the day on which they're presented. I think they can strengthen the hand of different groups, even within government and so on. I think they provide some sort of reckoning against which governments can be held to account in different ways. But it's true that ultimately all I have is the power of some sort of moral suasion, and that's very limited. A real change can only come from within. But that's my job, is to try to present a report that resonates with key population groups, encourages them to keep pressing, and encourages governments to think more deeply about why it's in their interests to actually try to reduce poverty, make the case not only in terms of humanitarian and ethical grounds, or not even legal grounds, but pragmatic, economic. You're undermining your own economy by having large pockets of poverty. These people could be working productively. They could be healthy citizens if you spend a little bit of money on that.
You're due to travel to the United Kingdom in November. What are you expecting to see there?
Well, the United Kingdom has undergone a pretty dramatic change since 2010, in particular when the policies of austerity were implemented. It's still too early for me to say what I'll find, obviously. I think it was encouraging that the Prime Minister said at the recent Conservative Party conference that we need to change our policy. We have neglected some of the social protection issues, and more effort needs to go into that. So I take that as a positive sign that there's an openness, even at the highest levels of government, to reevaluate policy and address some of the many problems. I put out a call for submissions, and I've had 290 very detailed submissions coming from local councils, from academic groups, major NGOs and so on, all pointing to what they see as pretty significant challenges. So I look forward to understanding those better.